Welcome back to season 6 of Sister Brunch, the one and only podcast that shares the stories of Black women and gender expansive people thriving in film, TV, and all types of media. I'm director Sean Pipkin West, your host for today. I'm flying solo without my extraordinary co-host Fanchen Cox, but she's here in spirit. We have a great episode with a very special guest. We are so honored to have her. She's a UPM unit production manager and a line producer in television. She's been a Producers Guild member since 2011 and a Directors Guild member since 2019. Currently, she's the chair of the Eastern ADUPM Council, Assistant Director, Unit Production Manager Council, and alternate on the National Board of the DGA. She's also the founder of the Diversity Coalition, New York Film and Television for Diversity and Inclusion, or NIFDY, as they call it. Sister Brunch, please welcome Kanella Williams Larrabee. Yay!
Hi.
How are you?
Good, good. It's good to be here.
Thank you so much. I know you're so busy. Thank you for doing this. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about your career and then you just add in and talk. So Kanella has over 20 years experience in the film and television industry. Her credits include the Netflix series Raising Dion and The Night Agent, and Rise and Chang Can Dunk for Disney Plus, and The Best Man Final Chapters on Peacock. And she has even more. She did season 1 of Evil, which is on CBS and Paramount Plus, and The Crowded Room on Apple TV Plus. So much to discuss. So Kanella, can you start by just giving us an idea of how you got started and how you've been able to really grow and thrive, especially in the last, 5 years in the industry?
Yeah, I mean, speaking about how I got started is can always be a little tricky. It's like, it's like the chicken or the egg, right?
Yes.
I've always been an artistic person, and I've always been into movies and television since I was a small child. But I guess my first experience with actually doing like a professional film was long time ago, since we're already talking about 20 years ago, when people still got jobs going on Craigslist. And I applied for an internship on an independent feature film, and it was actually legitimate. And I sent in my resume, and I already had some like what we call in the business real world experience. Or what I like to call film and television is the land of make believe. Everybody else is the real world. So I sent my resume in, and then I got a phone call from the production supervisor, and they said, "Wow, you actually have real experience. It's not you're not just some kid that's just straight out of college. You actually have done things." And that's back when internships were free, and they were like, "Hey, how would you like to get paid instead?"
May I stop you real quick? So you said this is an indie film. Do we know of this indie film? Did it ever get distributed or anything?
It's called Keen, and it was starring Damian Lewis.
Okay.
Which you guys will know him from Billions. So
Homeland.
And Homeland. So yes. But before all that.
Yes.
And so we're starring Damian Lewis, and the director was Lodge Kerrigan. So I was the director's assistant on that. So I did the script changes, and I did research for the script so it could be authentic. We filmed in New Jersey.
And so you were the director's assistant, but you were technically an intern?
No, I actually got paid. They
decided
to
good.
Pay. They were like, "Hey,
okay.
You have all this experience. Like, how would you like to be paid instead?" So I was not an intern. I actually did get paid.
Nice.
And so my first job out, just straight up because of just having real world experience, they were like, "Oh, this person actually has a brain." So they decided to pay me. They were like, "Oh, this is, she's done things." So
yeah, real world experience.
Real world experience. And so that's something that actually counted for once.
All right.
So that's how I got started. Yeah.
Okay. So you're a director's assistant. Okay, great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, from there, I just never stopped working.
I love that. So like right now, I mentioned it, but you are not right now working on the very popular Netflix action political thriller series, Night Agent.
Yeah. Right?
Season three. Yes.
Yeah. But I was on season two, and season two is going to be released next year on January 23rd. That's going to be the premiere. Woo! But we already started filming season three. So
yeah. And so by when this airs, it's already going to be. So everybody watch Night Agent on Netflix right now, because it's going to be out season two. And then you're working on season three right now.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's great. So I do also want to talk about your leadership involvement with the Guild, if you don't mind, the Directors Guild of America.
Yeah.
Right.
Like before I was a member of the Directors Guild, I was in the IATSE union, which is like, I always try to remember the acronym, what it stands for, but it was like the International Alliance
of Theatrical Stage
Employees. Yes. So I was an IATSE member, or some people say IATSE, mm-hmm. and I never really got involved in my local. And so when I joined the Directors Guild, I was like, I'm not going to do that again.
Mm-hmm. So Canela, can you tell us what your position or title was? What were you doing as an IATSE member? What was your position?
I was an assistant coordinator off in the office. And then I was a production coordinator in the office.
Okay. So okay, great. Okay.
Sorry. I had done that. That was the other union position. And I always had issues with the way things were run, but I never got involved. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to get involved. And I joined on an indie movie because I come from indie film. Mm-hmm. So I joined as a unit production manager for the DGA on an indie film. And that like temporarily shut down. Then I ended up getting the job on Evil. And the producer on that series was very involved in the Directors Guild. And so he was like, hey, you should come to a meeting. You should come to a unit production manager meeting. You should come to an assistant director, unit production manager, council meeting. And then so I started going and being involved. And I also noticed, there were at that time, it's a slightly different now. There weren't a lot of people in New York that looked like me when I went to those meetings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So then I started also going to
and what year was this meeting. Again?
It was 2019. Year? It was 2019. Mm. 2019, 2020, before COVID completely blew everything up. So it was only a few months before COVID. And it was at that time. And I was like, wow, there's not too many people who resemble my skin tone and my hair texture.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. And then I got involved in the diversity committees, too, to try to find, people who were also film professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And so from there, I just was like, OK, I need to get more involved. But then the world shut down with COVID. And then I started because of that experience and because, of course, with everything that happened with George Floyd, and the world was actually finally listening because everybody was home.
Yes.
The whole world was pretty much, unless you were an essential worker, the whole world was unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to start NIFTY, my diversity coalition, because I was like, all these people who I've met at meetings, all these people that now I'm seeing on Zooms from the Directors Guild will now listen. And so we were like, hey, let's change and make the business more inclusive.
I love so that. That's so great.
And did that. And you know, it worked for a while. Things are a little different now, as we know. World's changing again. But that's no reason to give up.
Hi, this is Sean Pipkin West. Thanks so much for supporting our podcast by following us on IG at Sister Brunch Podcast and engaging with our posts. Did you know you can also see our guests' lovely faces on the video version of the podcast on youtube.com/Trujillo Media? And that's Trujillo Media, TRUJULOMEDIA. All right, let's get back to our interview with Canela Williams-Larrabee. I I love that you took that initiative, Nifty, and I went to a few of those meetings, you know, and that's when I first got to know you, and then we're on the board together, and then, you know, DJ Black and just all that. But can you tell for, and also one of the reasons we have Sister Brunch is there's a lot of young people, specifically young women that look like us, you know, an Afro-Latina, Black, African-American, you know, that don't know, they want to get in this business, but they just don't know how, they don't know what this is. So we like to educate people and let them know. So your unit production manager as well as a line producer. Can you just tell in layman's terms for someone like, say, like in high school and college, what a unit production manager or a line producer does on a TV or a feature film?
That's always a loaded question for me.
Yes.
Because I just, like, I don't know everything.
But some of the things that you do.
Yeah. But some of the things, well, I'll start as far as a unit production manager, because I think sometimes they can be unit production manager and line producer. Producer can be interchangeable depending on what the project is.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But for a unit production manager, one is in the Directors Guild of America, which is something that I would encourage if... you have aspirations of being a director or a producer or a unit production manager, assistant director, location manager in New York and Chicago. I would recommend getting involved in that. Mm-hmm. But some of the things that I do is, like, I deal with the budget, and that's both as like a unit production manager and a line producer, but I hire all the crew. And I am involved, depending, it could be involved in hiring the directors or dealing with the director's deals. You can end up doing that as a unit production manager or mm-hmm. a line producer or producer. Mm-hmm. You will deal with casting and some of the casting deals and approving the cast deal memos for the people who are on screen. But again, it's dealing with vendors that are getting us the equipment for making the movie or the television show. And one of the things is that you have to have, maybe some people don't have a great personality, but you have to be able to talk to people.
Yes.
And have it where people will listen to what you say. It's a leadership position. Mm-hmm. So I guess I was like, that's one of the things. It's always hard for me to describe what it is, but it's like you hire the gaffer, which is like the head electrician, the mm-hmm. key grip, which is the person that supports all the lighting. Sometimes you are involved in hiring the director of photography, who brings everything on the screen, but definitely hiring the camera department or helping that person do that, because the producer will also hire the director of photography. That's what I'm saying. Sometimes it's interchangeable. It depends on what responsibilities you're given mm-hmm. based on the job and the needs of the job. Mm-hmm. You hire in the production office, just the people who are running things. And with this job, you get to kind of be there when things are being developed and sometimes before the scripts are even written.
Yeah. So you're there in the beginning as a UPM and also a line producer.
Yeah.
You're pretty much on before. Now, are you on before the production designer? Or how does that?
It depends.
Okay.
So that's another, it's another thing. Sometimes I am, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. sometimes I'm not. And in respect to the night agent, I was not on because you also have, you know, executive producers. There's various different types of producers mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. also act at, that are also line producers, like on the night agent, where it's like you have executive producer is a line producer, the producer is a line producer. Sometimes you have a producing team that deals with the financials, but then you'll have someone on the higher end who is an executive producer, also deals a bit more with creative. Mm-hmm. So I don't deal with creative as much, but my job is very creative because I have to help them with the money, bring their vision to the screen, the showrunner, the directors. So it actually is, even though it's not considered creative, it actually is very creative in that because I have to know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
And I try to say, okay, let's do this and come up with ways to get their vision on the screen and to have a finished product. It's like my boss my boss is the studio, my boss is the showrunner. I also have a lot of bosses. I have to, again, kind of people pleasing in a way, in a creative way. Because that's the end product is to get a good product and be picked up again or get another movie and that things look great and come within budget.
And you mentioned, I mentioned like production designer. Yeah. So can you just tell our audience like what a production designer does?
Well, production designer designs the film or TV show. So they have that creative vision where if you ever look at a film or television show and you notice like the different colors and the paints and just like, oh, wow, that's a really nice looking, I guess you're not thinking it's a set because that's the whole point, right? You're listening to everything, but it's the person that designs the look of the show or the movie. So they run the art department, which consists of like an art director that also helps they do their budget because everyone else does their own budgets. And then so I oversee the big budget with their smaller budgets.
And it's one of the biggest departments.
It's a pretty big department. Right? It's a pretty big department. You have assistant art directors, you have drafts people, you have graphics, which is like what all the stuff that you're putting on the screen. If you have like a television running in the background, that comes from the art department, graphics department, but then you also have the video department that puts it up on the screen. And that's also a different union. So there's also various different unions of
and props, people doing property that. Is under yeah, art there's department. Prop,
there is also set dressing. So that's the furniture that you see on the show. And sometimes the light fixtures too. That's also art department.
Oh, people yes.
Think it's not necessarily the lighting department, which is the electric department. And,
fixtures,
set decorating. Yes. Yeah. It's like all those little, so yeah, props. So it's all those little things that go on screen that help put the picture together with the director's vision.
Yeah. It's a very, very important department head, you know? Yeah. And again, like I said, it's a really huge department to run. And I know we've talked about props and then we talked about set dressing. So for our audience members, just so everybody knows, props, property department, everything that an actor touches.
Yes. Right? Everything that an actor touches. And eats too.
And eats.
So
yes.
When they're eating on screen, drinks. That is yes. also, and drinks, that is also the property department, or we say props. And the person who runs that is the prop master, or sometimes now people say prop mistress.
Woman. Yes, yes.
Depends. But a lot of the terms have masculine terms. So yes, sometimes we're working on gender neutrality.
Exactly.
With that, like they have in set best dressing, boy. A lead man. Yeah, best boy yeah. will say best person, or lead yes. man will be lead person.
Yes. Yeah. So, exactly.
And I feel like prop master, I was like, no one's really done anything. They'll say maybe it's just prop master or prop mistress.
Yeah. I just say props. Props. Yeah, I don't say, props. I just say
department
props.
Head. Department
property.
Head.
Property. Yeah.
But even with that, like props will deal. So the things that actors don't touch, that's set dressing, right? So if there's inanimate objects or little things like clocks and stuff, if the actor is not touching it. So, and then the things they touch, like let's say a gun or like we said before, drinks or food. But then sometimes you also have jewelry that can be props or it can be
costumes.
Yeah. The costume department, which is the people who get the actors dressed.
Yes.
So it's sometimes.
And I've been on shows where purses, it's been like, wait, is purses props or is it bags or props or are they wardrobe? Like, it's like literally, yeah. I always ask that question. Okay. Who's in charge of the purses? Yeah. Who's in charge of the bags? Well, you know,
and that's like another thing you said. You said wardrobe. So it's like costumes are the ones that design and then wardrobes are the ones that get everybody dressed.
Yes.
So there's like two departments that deal with the clothing, but yeah, exactly. It's like purses. Oh no, that's the property department, props department.
Yeah. And you know sometimes. What you... And in talking about what a UPM and line producer does, you talked about vendors, right? So vendors is very important because it's that, you know, you rent a lot of equipment, you buy a lot of equipment. So now we've come to the segment we like to call financials. So you have to sign most of the POs or purchase orders, right?
Yeah.
For
and
equipment.
The checks.
And to sign the checks, the payroll,
the payroll,
and the accounting.
Time cards, all the
yes,
get,
all
to
that
get people
stuff.
Paid and everybody paid.
So let's just, and again, very broadly, let's talk about one of the most, rented items on a set. So I'll just for right now think of like Technicrane always comes because very few people will carry a Technicrane unless you're on like a $200 million film, right?
Exactly.
So how much, you know, just approximate, like, does it take for a Technicrane? And first of all, why don't you explain what a Technicrane is? And then tell us like, for a weekly rental of a Technicrane, which is something that camera and grip department both works
they
with.
They both work on, And so the Technicrane is something that you would put a camera on, a filming camera on, to move it around a certain way. To get a certain look, but you have this department, the grips, which support the lighting department and also support the camera department that also help operate it, but yet it's also operated by the camera department. So it's a little confusing, but I wish we could like pop up a picture of it. It's this giant machine that you put
we'll do that in post.
A camera on there. Yeah. And just, and it's this thing. And then, and you have someone who's operating or multiple people who operate it and they move it around. It's a very, very expensive piece of equipment. A lot of times it's used to get a certain look, but also sometimes save time, but sometimes it adds time. So it's not, again, like you said, unless it's like a $200 million movie, it's not used as much, but it's something that easily can be with labor and everything could be, you know, $10,000, $15,000.
And it usually comes with two people, right?
Two technicians.
Two technicians.
Yeah.
So including the actual
camera department.
Yes. And so including the actual equipment.
Yeah.
Which is the Technicrane, plus the two labor, you know, the two camera operators. So that's you're about $10,000 a week, approximately, including the labor.
Or it could be it could be a day.
Okay.
The labor is it would be for the day, or sometimes you can get a deal of like a 3-day week, and the labor is daily, but it is also hourly. Like it'll be like let's say. $650 for a 10-hour day. And then it's overtime after that.
Yes, got it.
So what we also try to do is say, okay, well, how many hours do we need this? Okay, let's wrap them within their 10 hours.
Yes. And also, like, you don't need this first up, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, that kind of thing. Like,
oh, do they really need a pre-call, which is like having them called in before everyone else is in for the filming of the day for
and
people who don't know.
And that's where the communication and the planning of the director and the DP and the first AD, like you really have to work. Like if it does not need to be there at crew call, please don't have that thing come in at crew call. Like, you know, it's just one of those things, right?
And then when the UPM's looking and like approving the call sheet too, it's like, wait, why is it there at this time? Or why do they need a pre-call? It's not needed until the second scene of the day.
Exactly.
Oh, well, they need all this time to set up. And I was like, okay, well, how long that the AD will do the timing? You know, and be like, okay, I think we can get this done within this time and not have them in at least in a pre-call and they come in at call and they need 2 hours to set up. And then by that time, we're ready to start rolling at least on one portion of the scene.
Okay, got it. Hi, sisters and siblings. Yes, we know our guest is amazing, right? If you love what you're hearing, please do us the big favor and subscribe to Sister Brunch on your favorite podcast platform. And while you're subscribing, head over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Trujulomedia. And that's TRUJULOMEDIA. And subscribe there. It always helps if you comment on the videos as well. Ask us questions. Ask our guest questions. Tell us about your favorite brunch food or drink. What advice you'd give your younger self. What more do you want to see and hear on the Sister Brunch podcast? Let us know. We also appreciate your reviews and sharing the podcast with a friend or colleague. Help support us too. And without further ado, let's get back to this conversation. So here's another insert car work picture car work. Now, I know that's kind of going away because of, you know, the LED walls and just how VFX has been able to just put a car in a three-walled set and, you know, and all that stuff. But, you know, some people still like the realism, right, of an insert car.
In The Night Agent, we don't do, we do the realism part. We don't do the LED walls. We don't do the green screen. It's all actual action.
So for something like that, insert car work, picture car work, which is, you know, if you want to just tell real quick what that is, driving scene. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's driving scenes where you'll just have a little car that kind of follows the action too in when an actor is also in the car. So they'll be driving and you'll have another car that is, and we don't do insert cars as much. We do pod cars instead, actually, over on Night Agent. But that car will either be following the action, be in front of the action. So there's different ways so that it's again, you're not, it's just not the screen and you're just like, that's a fake background in the background, or it's distracting or it looks bad. That's something that I always notice. And then you have pod cars, which are used for stunts, which is something that's not used in New York as much. I think it's used in LA more, but we use it in New York on The Night Agent, where you have, you take a car and you have the special effects department, the practical effects department, put a whole seat together, change the whole mechanism. You have a stunt person driving on the top of the car. You have the actor in the front, but the person on the top is the one driving.
It is, and hopefully we'll be able to put an image of that. It is wild.
It is completely wild. And I was just like, it's not something that's used in New York often. And so I was like, not familiar with it until doing the Night Agent. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. And like, in Europe, use this? And in Europe, they use it all the time just because, you know, Europe has these small, you know, roads and stuff. And insert car doesn't fit a lot of times.
Yeah.
So that's all they do, those little pod. It's so great.
That's another thing, too. And so it's like the insert car, sometimes it's the pod car makes a little more sense. So we don't really do insert cars on our show.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's good because
New York has little streets.
You know, and we're here to, like, I just love, because I want everybody to, like, just learn something about our industry, you know, all these terms. So hoping, you know, gets people more interested in getting in our industry, especially young Black women. So let me ask you, so now we go into technology.
Yeah.
So now, is there like a phrase or a particular software or piece of equipment that you use as a unit production manager or producer that has helped you in the field, whether it's for efficiency or it just makes things easier for you or, you know, is there anything that you can think of?
Yeah. Movie Magic budgeting.
Okay. So Movie Magic budgeting.
That's something where I'll do budgets to see how much things cost, or do something for, you know, in between jobs, or like when we had the big strike that happened recently, where that's my tool, where I need to also know how to use that, because when I am doing the budget with the accountant, because we also have a whole huge accounting department and answering to finance at the studio, I need to know where everything is hidden. I need to know and check, be like, okay, are the fringes okay? Which is, that's the part that is like, you know, our pension and our health. They're like little things about the budget. So that's the tools that I use other than the person's rate. So that's one big thing that I use. Sometimes I will break down a script as a unit production manager to help me away from the assistant director to be like, okay, these are the little things that we're going to need. This is happening. This is a stunt, which is something that normally the assistant director does, but I do it for myself because I'm like, okay, I'm looking at that. I'm going to, and then you can have it in final draft and then have it break down the script that I have so that I can realize, okay, this is how much these things are going to cost if I have to do that, if I'm not having like an AD do a shooting schedule for me. Sometimes I'll do that as well.
movie magic budgeting.
And now this is magic scheduling.
Yes, as well.
That as well.
Scheduling. Yeah. All right, there we go. So now on Sister Brunch podcast, we have a signature question that we like to ask all of our guests. And that is, so imagine you're sitting down to a Sister Brunch, right, with all of your colleagues, and you're with your younger self. We're going to say younger, like early 20s. All right. You can drink. Let's say you're okay. Drinking age. Okay. What are you both eating and what are you both drinking? And then also, what do you tell your younger self?
Okay. What are we both eating? I would say that my younger self is probably having something like a veggie burger.
Okay. Okay.
I'm a vegetarian. And then my older self is probably having something, you know, super yummy and healthy, like some sort of veggie stir fry. And I'm drinking, older self's drinking a glass of wine.
Okay.
and my younger self is probably drinking a soda.
Okay. A soda. Like what kind of soda? Like a Coke or something?
I'm a Pepsi girl. I was
a Pepsi girl. Okay.
I'm very rare. I know. It's very rare. Everyone likes Coca-Cola.
And the last question was, what do you tell her? Like, what's some advice or what's something that you would tell your younger self right now that you wish you had known back then about life or the industry, anything, you know?
Don't take what you do too seriously.
Now why? Okay. Let's dig deeper into that.
'Cause at the end of the day, there are more important things. There are more important things.
Like
my younger self, so serious, everything had to be perfect. And myself now realizing that I'm only human.
Yes.
And I will always do my best and I will always go above and beyond. But to err is to be human and to just remind myself of that and to not be so serious about things all the time. Which is hard, I think.
Yeah, and especially as us as women of color, black women, you know, like, and at our levels, that's how we got to where we are.
Exactly.
We did so much above and beyond because we have to, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, you're talking about there's other more important things. So, like, what are you talking about? Family, your health, or like, you know, what?
Health. Mm-hmm. Health. Health. Yeah, that's a
sleep.
Big thing.
Get sleep.
Get sleep. Drink water.
Work out when you can.
Work out, which I definitely worked out more back then, but continue to work out.
Yes.
It is important to make that time for your family and your friends, you know, your loved ones.
Yes.
And to be there for others, as long as it doesn't take away your peace. Like you have to kind of find a sort of balance. And I'd also tell myself that everything's going to be okay.
It will be. And it, like, you know what? It will be. It is going to be okay.
Yeah.
But like, we win okay. in the
some,
end.
Yeah. It's like somehow you survive this. And it's going to be okay. Even though it seems tough now, but it'll be okay. And if you didn't get to where, for what I would tell my younger self, if I didn't get to, I'm having a dark night of the soul. And I feel like things aren't going my way, to tell myself, you are doing all you can.
Yes.
It is not your fault. Other things are at play. And you will realize what this means in a few years.
There you go. Yes, yes. We take stuff on that we necessarily don't need to take on. It's just
take on and sometimes no matter what you do, the outcome is still going to be the same.
Exactly. Oh, man. That is such good advice. And all you youngsters, and not even young people, just, you know, think about that. What's really important? Family, friends, your health, you know, sleep, drinking water.
Health is a big thing in our industry.
Yes, it is. You know, we
very stressful.
We recently had a big time first AD pass away in his 50s, which is not old, people. It was not old.
No.
56 or 57, I believe.
Yeah, I think like 57 or something.
Yeah, so very, take care of yourself because this business is not easy. Take care of yourself. And on that note, all of our audience members, thank you so much for watching. And Canela, thank you so much for blessing us with your presence and all your knowledge. And I know I'll see you at the next national board meeting.
Yes,
and
I will be there. I'm going to try. I was like, I don't know. I might be filming, but yeah, that is the plan.
No, this has been so great. And I know we missed Tasha. I mean, and Tasha, our producer, is not here. And also Fanshan's not here. But so it's just little old me, y'all. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next time on Sister Brunch Podcast. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Season 6 of the Sister Brunch Podcast. Remember to support us by subscribing, reviewing, commenting, and sharing with your friends and colleagues. We appreciate your follows on Instagram at Sister Brunch Podcast, where you can also find your community of Black women and gender expansive people. We post different industry opportunities and keep you updated on past guests. Watch, comment, share, and subscribe to our videos at youtube.com/Chujalo Media. And we're also on TikTok at Chujalo Media. And again, that's at TRUJULOMEDIA. Sister Brunch is brought to you by Chujalo Productions and was created by Anya Adams, Christabel Nsia Bwadi, and Fanshan Cox. Our producer for Season 6 is Ms. Tasha Rogers. Sister Brunch is recorded on the unceded territory of the Tongva and the Chumash people in Los Angeles, California. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Thanks for following, reviewing, and subscribing. Tell all your friends and family members and colleagues and coworkers, listen and watch Sister Brunch Podcast. And we will see you next time and talk to you next time.